Iran has announced that it will resume uranium enrichment in its latest scaling back from the 2015 nuclear deal since the U.S. withdrew from the landmark accord and the EU's failure to remedy the withdrawal. In what condition will that leave the Iran nuclear deal? Well, in this edition of the debate, we will look at Iran's gradual scaling back from the deal and how the U.S. and EU will react.
It's almost a year and a half since the United States unilaterally withdrew from the 2015 nuclear deal between Iran and the world powers. 6 months later, and exactly on the 5th of November 2018, Washington fully reimposed all its sanctions on Tehran that had been lifted under the deal known as a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Despite the U.S. move, the remaining signatories to the deal pledged to help Iran evade the U.S. sanctions and smoothly continue its business with the rest of the world. However, despite the promises, no tangible results could be produced over the past 18 months. In response to Europe's inaction, Iran started reducing its commitments under the nuclear agreement phase-wise. On Tuesday, which coincides with the anniversary of the reimposition of the U.S. sanctions, Tehran announced its new scale-back and sent a letter to the International Atomic Energy Agency to inform it about its decision.
The step that we will take as of Wednesday will be at the Fordo nuclear facility. We have some 1,044 centrifuges at Fordo. Under the nuclear deal, these centrifuges can keep spinning, but gas cannot be injected to them. Now, under the fourth step, we will begin injecting gas to Fordo centrifuges.
Rouhani also made it clear that Iran cannot keep abiding by the rules of the agreement while other parties fail to live up to their obligations.
We cannot fully abide by our commitments while they fail to live up to their obligations. We know that they are sensitive about Fordo and the centrifuges, but once they live up to their commitments, we will stop feeding gas to the centrifuges. Therefore, the fourth step, like the previous ones, is reversible.
Iran says all measures it has taken so far regarding its nuclear program lie within the framework of the landmark 2015 agreement. The IAEA had also confirmed Iran's compliance with the accord in more than a dozen of its reports. Now it remains to be seen whether Tehran's fourth step encourages Western countries to take serious actions on trade with Iran or the Islamic Republic continues to decrease its commitments under the deal.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, activist and journalist Henry Noor joins us from Berkeley, and from the Answer Coalition, Richard Becker joins us from San Francisco. Gentlemen, welcome. Henry Noor, let me first start with you and get your reaction that Iran has announced that it will resume this uranium enrichment. Starting from Wednesday, gas will be injected into centrifuges at Fordo, and that's part of the fourth step that Iran has taken to reduce its nuclear commitments.
Well, let me say, first of all, that I don't think any country should be developing nuclear power or even more so nuclear weapons. It's just too dangerous after the experience of Chernobyl and Three Mile Island here in the U.S. and Fukushima, even at a time when we need to be getting off of fossil fuels in a big hurry. I don't think nuclear power is a good answer. That said, I think the United States' position and behavior in this situation is completely unjust, illogical, hypocritical. When you negotiate a deal with somebody, you're going to do something, and in return, you're going to ask the other side to do something, and you agree on it. And then you decide, well, I'm not going to do what I said I would do, but I'm going to demand that you do what you said you'd do. That makes no sense. The world can't operate that way. So I have a lot of, even though I don't like nuclear power, any kind of nuclear development, I have a lot of sympathy for what you quoted from Mr. Rouhani, saying that as long as the United States is out of compliance, you can't expect us to comply. And I Trump is obviously a madman, but I'm actually disappointed in the Europeans, because for a while it looked like maybe they were going to stand up to the United States and find a way to continue to, eliminate the sanctions, and which, in my opinion, had no basis in the first place, and resume trade and investment with Iran, despite the opposition of the United States. Now, I'm no expert in this, but it appears that They have completely caved in. The Europeans are going along totally with the American position and refusing to invest or trade. And that's, you know, under those circumstances, who with an open mind can blame Iran for doing what it's doing?
Well, Rebecca, why do you think the Europeans, as our guest there said, have caved into the U.S. and not followed through with their commitments?
Well, I think the basic reason is that the U.S., through the Department of Treasury, is threatening any institution, any bank or corporation that does business in defiance of U.S. sanctions. And we have to say, these sanctions are not only a violation of Iran's sovereignty, they're a violation of many countries' sovereignty, but those countries are not, as Henry said, they are not standing up to the U.S. And, you know, at some point this has to end, where the rest of the world doesn't trade, or much of the rest of the world doesn't trade with Cuba, or doesn't trade with Iran, or doesn't trade with Venezuela, because they are threatened with sanctions, and they are threatened with enormous fines that can be billions and billions of dollars. And of course, international trade that cannot take place without being facilitated, credit being issued through the banks. So that's where and they are usually the recipients of these kind of fines imposed by the U.S. Treasury Department. But I really think that we have to see it for what it is. It's like a form of international gangsterism. This is just thuggery against other countries. You know, we'll make you an offer you can't refuse over and over and over again, that if you don't go along with this imperialistic policy toward Iran or toward any other country that's being targeted, then you will suffer. And that's the reality of U.S. foreign policy today.
Well, when our guest there, Henry Knorr, says that you will suffer, to use his words, that's something that the U.S. is now accused of when it comes to the humanitarian side of this whole affair. Even though we know that medical supplies, equipment, medication should be exempt, the U.S. has made it very hard, if not close to impossible, for much of it to transpire based on the financial restrictions that have been placed. Even though Iran produces its own medication domestically, almost all of it, it needs the ingredients, but it can't get those ingredients through for either financial reasons or what have you. Do you think that the U.S. is intentionally after harming Iranians who are in need of medication?
Is that addressed to me? I'm sorry.
Yes, it is to you.
I suppose that's right. I mean, I think the main motivation is, you know, some kind of geopolitical calculation. The Americans clearly want to have regime change in your country. It's your country, not America's, but I guess it seems clear that inflicting human suffering on that basic level, denying people medications and so on, is part of that strategy. It's horrifying. I would like to make one other point I meant to mention at the beginning and neglected to, which is the question of Israel. You know, Israel has had nuclear weapons apparently for more than 50 years, apparently, according to the best reports, several hundred nuclear weapons and all kinds of nuclear development. And they've never signed the non-proliferation treaty. They're out of compliance with every relevant international agreement. And yet the United States considers them, you know, our best buddy in the world. So the hypocrisy of this is very clear. It's not really about who's going to have centrifuges operating at what capacity and what level of enrichment and so on. It's about the United States imperial strategy.
Well, one thing that needs to be mentioned, Richard Becker, since our guest mentions Israel there, is that Iran's leader has issued a fatwa against nuclear weapons. That is not part of the doctrine of the Islamic Republic, and that needs to be reflected, because that is very important in the whole nuclear equation. The U.S., I'm sure, has enough intelligence to know, and if it doesn't, then I forget the number of times that IAEA has verified that Iran is not after nuclear weapons. Why hasn't that justified or been enough of a justification for the U.S. To know that Iran is not after pursuing nuclear weapons?
Well, I don't think that that's ever been the concern of the U.S. government. The real concern is that Iran have nuclear weapons. I think what they are doing is using this as a pretext, using this issue as a pretext in seeking what the real objective is, which is regime change and the overthrow of the government of Iran. I would like to mention that a quarter of a century ago, 25 years ago, I was in Iraq with former Attorney General Ramsey Clark, and saw the impact of the sanctions. Iraq is a much less developed country economically, much less industrially diverse and so forth than Iran. The impact was unbelievable on that country. And I remember going, hearing that the U.S. is food and medicine are exempt from the sanctions. That was completely false. No shipment went into Iraq without the without being inspected by the U.S. Navy, at least by sea. And the impact of the on the population was to kill a million people, half of them children under the age of five. That was a policy designed to weaken the country. It wasn't really meant to cause people to rise up, because if people are weaker and weaker, how are they going to rise up, even if they wanted to? And it was really intended to weaken the country, and did weaken it in preparation for the invasion in 2003 that and the beginning of the occupation of Iraq, which continues down till today. And so there's the myth and the reality. And one of the myths I think we should also mention is that is about the NPT, the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which is often talked about, and that other countries can't acquire nuclear weapons because of the NPT. What isn't talked about is point two, the second part of the NPT, which says that the nuclear weapon states must disarm. And in 1996, the International Court of Justice, in a ruling, said this is not just something that's optional, but that the nuclear powers, in their interpretation of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT, was that the nuclear weapons powers are required to enter into a process that will lead to full disarmament. The United States, as the leading nuclear power, has never contemplated that, and is now seeking to expand its and, quote unquote, modernize its nuclear weapons arsenal.
Mm-hmm. Henry Knorr, we do talk about the effect that the sanctions have had on Iran, but Iran has, since the sanctions been exerted up to this point, has kind of been desensitized and grown out of it and has been able to resist them, so much so that the International Monetary Fund has come out and said that Iran's economic growth, although it went through a contraction for the past 2 years, this year and the next, it will have positive economic growth in terms of its GDP. At this point, the sanctions are not having the desired effect, let's put it that way, that the U.S. wanted. Then how can the U.S. think that their maximum pressure campaign, which at this point is failing, is going to go anywhere close to what you have said and many others have said, this ideal regime change?
Well, I'm not sure these people making these decisions are entirely rational. I think they're under the influence of some lobby groups, the Israelis, the MEK, different other groups who are fanatically determined to try anything they can to destroy Iran, or at least produce a regime change. So they flail around and try to find something to keep these pressure groups happy, whether or not they're going to be effective. But, even if I didn't know what you just said about the projections of economic growth, and I'm glad to hear that, but certainly there would be more progress and people would be better off without the sanctions. So they're still having some negative effect for sure, and they're just as unfair and arbitrary and unjust as ever, even if Iran finds ways to circumvent them or develop resources within its own country that ease some of the pain. But there's still pain.
Well, Richard Becker, very curious to find out from you how you view the way that Tehran is moving forward with this nuclear agreement. Because at this time, it's the fourth time that they have scaled back their commitments. But each time that they do that, they do stress that these steps are reversible if their demands are met. They make sure that they capitalize on that. But at the same time, how much longer do you think that Iran is going to continue with this? Or should I ask, why is Iran leaving that door open for perhaps negotiations before pulling out of the deal, if that is something that they are mulling?
Well, I think that it's been clear since the agreement was reached that Iran desired to have that agreement in place and to have the sanctions that were imposed in the new round of sanctions that was imposed in the Obama-Hillary Clinton government, which were extreme sanctions, much more extreme sanctions. They, of course, wanted to get those lifted and were willing to enter into the JCPOA, which was had significant compromises for Iran involved in it. But in order to normalize its relations, the relations were never fully normalized, in fact, because the question remained after the signing of the JCPOA, what would the next government of the United States do? Would it adhere to the agreement? What would its attitude be? Because there were obviously voices in the U.S. establishment that remained adamantly opposed to the agreement. And it turned out that that's what happened. The U.S. pulled out of the agreement and so forth. But clearly, in the world that is so highly dependent today on international economic relations, it's very, very difficult for Iran. And the fact that, despite the fact, and I think Henry mentioned this too, that the Europeans did not do what they said they were going to do. They didn't find a way, at least adequately, to stand up to the U.S. and to undermine the U.S. Sanctions. That's created a very difficult situation for Iran. And Iran is going step by step, I think, in that to try to put pressure on Europe and the other signatories, Russia and China, to the JCPOA, to take meaningful action if they don't want to see the agreement abrogated altogether. And they keep saying they want Iran to stick to the agreement, but they have not been taking the actions that are necessary to allow or to ensure that Iran would stay in the agreement.
So, Henry Noor, when it comes to Iran and its nuclear program, it's a member of the NPT, that's a check. It's not pursuing nuclear weapons. The IAEA has stated that it's under the most severe inspection regime ever, and Iran is under that. So that's another check that it's not after nuclear weapons. The U.S. blames Iran for being a bad actor in the region. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani, when he attended the UN General Assembly, he talked about this Persian Gulf peace plan, which is a regional pact that he has proposed, of which just recently he sent out the official letter to the Persian Gulf countries, which includes Saudi Arabia, so that they can establish regional security in the area. It seems like Iran is doing all that it can in order to show good faith. Why isn't it getting that back?
Well, I think, I think that it would be great if the Gulf countries and the other countries in the region pick up on this proposal. I don't have any particular confidence that they will, but I think the fundamental thing again is the U.S. and its imperial interests and the lobbies that it's dominate its policy in the region. The Israelis are fixated on Iran after the destruction of Iraq, effectively. Israelis have fixated on Iran as the main factor that limiting their ambitions in the Middle East and their goal of expanding and destroying the Palestinians and so on. And the Israelis directly and indirectly through the Israel lobby in the United States have tremendous interests. There are some other Middle Eastern interests that apparently push the American government, and they have allies in high places. I mean, we John Bolton is now out of the administration, but until recently was the national security advisor, and he has longstanding ties with this group of fanatical opponents of your government called the MEK. And I'm sure there are others in high places, and they continue to pursue these policies regardless. You know, it has nothing to, as Richard said, it has nothing to do with peace or whatever. It's just part of the, it's a tactic in the American imperial strategy.
Well, Richard Becker, waiting for a reaction from the U.S. on this announcement that was made by Iran's President Hassan Rouhani. And Donald Trump, based on what we have read, has said that we're looking into it, and he said the famous words, "We'll see what happens." Is that kind of the way that the U.S. is looking at Iran when it comes to its foreign policy? We'll see what happens.
No, I don't think so. I think they're trying to determine what will happen. But they have a big problem, and that is, you can see that the. Well, for a long time in the aftermath of World War II, so for a long period of time, you know, we're talking about 75 years ago almost, the U.S. was successful. When they went after regime change, they were usually against countries that were developing countries or weaker countries, they usually succeeded. Now they're not succeeding so quickly. I mean, they're inflicting great damage, but they were sure they were going to overthrow the government of Venezuela back in February. They were sure that was going to happen, and then Nicaragua, and then Cuba, and now they're going after Iran. And it's not happening, though, for them. The world has changed somewhat. Despite all of the ups and downs of things, but it really has. So what they're trying to do, they're still seeking this. This is what the objective is. They're using all kinds of accusations. I remember back, you know, right after the occupation of Iraq, they began accusing Iran of having nuclear weapons. And in 2005, actually, Iran tabled a resolution of the United Nations saying there has to be going forward with disarmament under the NPT, not just our obligations, but your obligations. And as I said, those obligations on the part of the nuclear weapons powers have never been undertaken, particularly the United States as the leading nuclear weapons power. But the United States is going forward. They're using all kinds of falsifications. They're making the story up as they go along. And when Trump says, "Oh, we'll see what happens," he says, "We'll see what we make up next."
Okay, we're going to end it there. Thank you very much. Let me thank our guest, activist and journalist Henry Noor from Berkeley. And thank you, Richard Becker from the Answer Coalition, who spoke to us from San Francisco. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. For Mikko Vitale and the entire team, it's goodbye until next time.